Friday, September 14th. Dear Scylla, this week in language arts we talked about description. Mr. Barrett says it's important to make sure that when we describe things in a piece of writing, we appeal to all of the five senses: sight, smell, sound, taste, and touch. We've been describing things in our writing journals all week. I described Mom's vegetable garden and the Jesus statue in front of church. Today I wrote one about June. June's skin is dark, like the night without stars. But the stars are in her eyes, those bright twinkling orbs. Her forehead is clear and smooth, unlike mine, which is scattered with pimples. She wears two earrings in each ear, one a golden circle and one a diamond stud. Her laugh is sometimes tinkly like a bell, and sometimes snorty like the funniest thing ever. Both laughs are equally awesome. I threw it away after class, though. I didn't know if I should use the word awesome in a class assignment. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss you. Saturday, September 15th. Dear Scylla, it's baby time. Mom got the call from Aunt Maureen an hour ago. You're having a baby today. Or tomorrow. I'm not sure how long these things take. Either way, you're going to be a mom. I've decided that even though you're giving the baby up, you'll still officially be a mom, a grown-up. I still haven't decided whether I want you to tell me all about what happened, what's happening now, after the baby's out of you. It'll either be totally cool or totally disgusting. Mom and Dad are packing their suitcases now. I didn't know they were planning on going down after the birth, but I guess it makes sense. You're still their daughter. They should be with you right now. They want to be with you, too. I can hear them rushing around upstairs. I argued that I should join them, but Mom and Dad do not agree. I begged and pleaded and promised them I'd do the dishes every single night for the rest of my life, but they still didn't change their minds. Not even when I said I'd dry the dishes, too. And you know how much I hate drying the dishes. Aunt Megan is staying with me instead. I haven't seen her since before you left, when she was about to leave on a business trip to Italy. She told me she'd send me a postcard and a present, but didn't send either. I guess this whole not writing to Evie thing runs in our family. Not that I cared. I didn't really want an I Love Italy t-shirt. But it'd be cool to show it to people, to know that even if I've never been anywhere exciting, that people related to me have, and that they think about me while they're there. I wonder if you're thinking about me now. I wonder if you're in pain. I bet I could help you. I'd tell you funny stories. I'd watch cheesy reality shows with you to pass the time. I'd hold your hand, even though I bet you'd squeeze it so hard my fingers might break. That's what always happens when people have babies on TV. I just heard the door slam. Now I hear Aunt Megan's voice. She's here already. That must mean the baby's close. I can't wait to hear what happens. Maybe once the baby's out of you, Mom and Dad won't think of you as a sinner. Maybe the sin will be washed away, kind of like what's supposed to happen in baptism. You'll be clean. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss you. Sunday, September 16th. Dear Scylla, I wonder if you're in labor still. I wonder if you got to hold your baby before they took her away. I'm wondering a lot of things, because I have no idea what's going on. Mom called this morning, but Aunt Megan hung up before I got a chance to talk. She said Mom and Dad would talk to me when they get home. I needed something to distract myself after church. Otherwise, I'd be thinking about you all day long. So I went over to June's house. She invited me. She probably would have invited Katie and Maggie, too, but they were at this drama class at the community center. They wanted me to take the class, too, but I forgot to sign up in time. I was okay with hanging out at June's, though. Her house is small, but it's only her and her mom. Her dad died when she was little. June told me all matter-of-factly, but I still didn't ask any more questions. That would have been way rude. June's mom was meeting with a client. She's a graphic designer, so we grabbed a box of granola bars and some waters and went up to June's room, which is the coolest room ever. The walls are bright orange, which sounds ugly but looks totally cool, like we're on the surface of the sun or something. Then she has all these pictures of bright pink and yellow and green flowers on the wall. They're not photographs, though, or even paintings. They look like a mixture of both, like they could be on the wall of some modern art museum. June's mom made them. After I stared around her room for about 5 minutes, we did a little homework, but only a little because it's Sunday and we're not that nerdy. Then we watched The Force Awakens. It was the 100th time for both of us, but we still love it. We took turns pretending to be Rey and acted out the lightsaber fight at the end. It was fun. I like June. I mean, as a friend. When the movie was over, June said something weird. She said that Rey was cute. I didn't respond for a few seconds because I didn't know what to say. Katie and Maggie say that Joey's cute all the time. Katie says that Ethan from our class is cute, too. They never say that girls are cute, though, even though I definitely notice stuff like that sometimes. It's like how Mom says that actresses on TV are pretty, or People magazine has that Most Beautiful People issue every year. It's a fact. Some people are cute. Some aren't. There's nothing weird about that. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss you. P.P.S. When I got home after the movie, Aunt Megan was on the phone with Mom again. She still wouldn't tell me anything. And now Mom and Dad won't be home until early next week. P.P.P.S. You'd better be with them. Thursday, September 20th. Dear Scylla, you weren't with them, but you obviously know that. When Mom and Dad walked through the front door, Dad came in with their bags. Mom came in with an empty Coke bottle and a banana peel. They didn't have you. They looked really tired. Mom was playing with her cross necklace, the way she always does when she's upset. I knew they probably wanted to talk to me about why you weren't home, but I didn't give them the chance. I didn't want to ask them why you were away at school, because that would mean you'd decided to stay away. Because if you really wanted to come home, you'd have fought harder. So I ran upstairs to my room and slammed the door. Then I turned on my music super loud, without earbuds, ha, and I pulled my covers over my head. I'm done writing to you. I'm only sending this letter so you'll know that. If you want to talk to me, you'll talk to me. You know where to find me. Love, Evie. P.S. I don't miss you. P.P.S. I'm using St. Augustine's address for this letter because Mom says you don't have an email address there. I checked the website, though, and all the teachers have email. So does the custodial specialist. Is that what they call the janitor at your fancy new school? Whatever. You won't write back anyway. P.P.P.S. Neither will I. Tuesday, October 2nd. Dear Scylla. Okay, maybe I'm not done writing. Because I realized something today. Something that made my chest ache. Something that made me realize I'm not the only one hurting. I went over to June's house again yesterday. I wanted her to come here, but Mom was sick. Really sick. She spent the entire day in her room with the door closed. When I asked her if I could go in, she didn't even answer me. She just groaned and sniffled. June's Aunt Ophelia was over too. She was visiting with her baby, Nina, who was 2 months old. That's why June moved here from California, so they could be closer to family. Nina has the teeniest fingers and the tiniest toenails and the cutest little upturned nose. Even though she's so little, she has a ton of curly black hair. Aunt Ophelia had put a purple headband on her, too, to match her outfit. She smelled like baby powder and sugar cookies. Did your baby smell like that after you had her? How could you have smelled that and still given her up? Aunt Ophelia asked me if I wanted to hold Nina. I shook my head at first, but then she held her out to me. Nina wasn't crying at all, and she kept making gurgling noises, where these little spit bubbles popped out of her mouth. She was too cute to say no to. I pretended she was your baby. I even named her in my head. Anna. Hush, little Anna. Don't you cry. Evie's gonna sing you a lullaby. Aunt Ophelia was talking to June's mom about labor. They called it comparing horror stories. It really was gross. Aunt Ophelia said she had been in labor for 31 hours with Nina. That's more than a whole day. She said she was screaming nonstop the whole time. June's mom's story was totally different. She had June in a tub. Not in a regular bathtub, but in a special pool designed for having babies. June actually came out into the water. Isn't that cool? I wonder how you had Anna, or whatever you would have named her. I wonder how much it hurt. When her mom said all this, June made a face and pulled on my arm. Mom, I do not want to hear all about your bodily fluids and my smushy face again. Evie and I have work to do. I gave Nina one more pat on the head. I made sure to watch out for her soft spot and left. I could still smell her baby smell in June's room. I was still calling her Anna in my head. I was crying before we even got to June's room. When she asked me why, I started to make up some story about dust getting in my eye or having a sick grandma. But then I told her the truth. The real truth, not the fake truth that Mom and Dad forced me to tell everyone, even Katie and Maggie. And she was okay with it. She gave me a hug and squeezed me extra tight. The hug gave me little goosebumps, which was weird. I also kept thinking about how June had said that Ray was cute. But then I decided there was nothing weird going on. It's just that I've never had such a good friend before. A little while later, I had to pee. June's upstairs toilet was broken, so I had to use the one downstairs. I peeked in the kitchen as I walked by. I wasn't trying to eavesdrop. I just wanted to see the baby again. But Nina was sleeping in a sling around Aunt Ophelia, so I couldn't see her face. I was surprised she didn't wake up, though, because Aunt Ophelia was complaining really loudly. All this stuff about how she was sleeping like 2 hours a night and how she cried all the time. How hard it was to shower and how lonely she was when her husband was at work. Mrs. Reynolds squeezed her hand and mumbled a bunch of stuff I couldn't hear, so I finally went to the bathroom. Hearing them made me realize something. For months now, I've been thinking about me. About me feeling alone in our house, with only Mom and Dad for company. About me not being able to talk to you. About me not getting to meet the baby before you gave her away. Here's what else I realized yesterday, though. I forgot to think about you. You must be even lonelier than me. You must want someone to talk to. You must miss so many things. Your friends, Alex, Anna, me, hopefully. Maybe you're depressed, and that's why you haven't written back. I keep imagining you in a cavernous room in your creepy old school thinking no one loves you. I care. I love you. Love, Evie. P.S. Most of all, I miss you. P.P.S. Do you have a phone there? I know Mom and Dad took yours away after that first big fight, but isn't there one in your room? Can you call and give me the number? Tuesday, October 9th. Dear Scylla, here's something I thought of yesterday. Maybe my letters weren't getting through to you at Aunt Maureen's. Maybe the mailman really couldn't find her farm, just like Dad couldn't on our road trip. So I'm going to hope you start writing back now that I'm writing to you at your new school. And I'm going to try to be nicer to you, more understanding, a better sister. Here's the deal. You don't have to come home. If you're still ashamed you had a baby or you don't want to see Alex or you're scared of what your friends will say, that's okay. You don't have to come home for good. Can you just write back, though? Even once? Can you let me know you're okay? Love, Evie. P.S. Because I miss you. Monday, October 15th. Dear Scylla, I saw Alex at the high school football game on Friday when I went with June. Well, I went with Mom and Dad. They'd signed up to sell tickets, but June came with us. We saw Alex when we were going to get food at the snack shack. June snuck a few handfuls of my popcorn, which her orthodontist had told her not to eat. And I snuck a bite of her hot dog. Mom wouldn't let me get one since it was Friday. June's mom doesn't care about the no meat on Fridays rule, though. Do you know why? It's because June's family is atheist. I've never known anyone who doesn't believe in God before. I didn't even think it was an option. God is real. Of course God is real. But when I asked June why she didn't believe, she just shrugged. Why should I believe? She asked. Where's the evidence? I looked at the pine trees surrounding the football field, at the moon shining in the sky. I remembered the sunset earlier that day and how a squirrel scurried across the grass when I left for school. There's the evidence, I thought. I didn't say anything, though, because I got distracted when I saw Alex. He was standing by the fence talking to one of the cheerleaders. I don't know her name, but I think she's been over to our house before for some school project you guys did together one year. He turned around right when I was looking at him and made eye contact. He jumped a little bit, like he'd been electrocuted, or like he'd been caught doing something very, very wrong. He ran over to me right away. "We're just friends. We're just friends." He kept saying it over and over, like it mattered to me who he was dating. Like it might matter to you. "Do you still love Alex? I know you guys had a big fight, but he's still the father of your baby. Even if you don't have her anymore, she still belonged to you two once." "I liked Alex. I still do like him. Even if you guys had a fight. He doesn't treat me like a little kid. He asked about you. I wish I had something to tell him. Please write back. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss you." Monday, October 22nd. Dear Scylla, yesterday afternoon Maggie and Katie went over to June's house for a horror movie film fest. I couldn't go, of course, since Mom and Dad are morally opposed to horror movies. I bet you can still picture Mom's pursed lips all those times you asked to watch one. June told me about the movies in art class today, though, complete with creepy sound effects. She makes the best faces. She even looked pretty pretending to be a zombie. Love, Evie. P.S. I still miss you. Remember me? Your sister? Your sister who'd love to hear from you? P.P.S. I bet I'll get a letter any day now. Saturday, October 27th. Dear Scylla, Mom heard me say your name on the phone this morning. Her lips pressed together like she'd tasted sour lemonade, like that time we added salt instead of sugar. I was talking to Katie and Mom made me hang up right away. When I told her it wasn't fair, she said that nothing that happened was fair. Then she went to her room and cried. The television in her room was blaring, but I still heard the sobs. When she came out, her eyes were all red and puffy, but she pretended nothing had happened. We folded our hands and said our prayers, and everything was fine again. Mom made macaroni and cheese for dinner tonight, the kind with three cheeses, just the way you like it. She made brownies, too, and cheesecake. She's turning into a cooking machine. Mom cried after dinner, too. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss you. Tuesday, October 30th. Dear Scylla, Mom and Dad are the worst. The absolute, probably verified in a scientific experiment, worst. Katie and Maggie and June are dressing up as devils for Halloween. We all went to the party store together and bought the coolest costumes. A red bodysuit with sparkles all over it, red shimmery tights, and a long tail. We even got headbands with devil horns and matching pitchforks. When we tried the costumes on at June's house, she kept flicking her tail in my face, which totally tickled. But when I told Mom and Dad about our costumes, they said there was no way I could go trick-or-treating dressed as the devil. Like the second I put my costume on, I'm going to start worshiping Satan or something. Don't they get it? Halloween is a holiday. It's for dressing up and laughing and trick-or-treating and getting candy. Lots and lots of candy. This is probably going to be one of my last years, too, so I wanted to go with my friends. As a devil, not the real devil, who probably isn't real anyway. A pretend devil. Is that so hard to understand? They are the worst! Love, Evie. P.S. I miss you. I miss the voice of sanity in this house. Wednesday, October 31st. Dear Scylla, in the end, we were three devils and an angel. An angel wearing a white sweater, white leggings, and a halo made out of cardboard. It was the worst Halloween costume ever. June said I looked cute, though. I didn't know what to think about that, but I guess I did look cute. At least my hair did. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss you. P.P.S. Did you dress up for Halloween? If you don't want to write back, maybe you can just send me a picture? Or do they not do Halloween at your school? P.P.P.S. I got 12 Reese's peanut butter cups, and two were full size. Tuesday, November 6th. Dear Scylla, no letters, no nothing. That's a double negative, but you know what I mean. I emailed the headmaster of St. Augustine's yesterday. I figured that if these letters really aren't getting through to you, maybe he can give you a message in person. He must be really busy, though, because I haven't heard anything yet. From anyone. It's my birthday this week, too. Hint, hint. You don't have to buy me a present. A letter would be nice. I'd even take a postcard at this point. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss you. Thursday, November 8th. Dear Scylla, happy birthday to me. Happy birthday to me. Happy birthday to me. Happy birthday to me. Or not. Last year when I turned 11, you woke me up on my birthday by bouncing on my bed and shoving a shiny red bag in my face. A shiny red bag filled with colored pens. My favorite. Two new books and a Hogwarts t-shirt. When I turned 10, you woke me up on my birthday by bouncing on my bed and giving me a gift certificate to the trampoline park. When I turned 9, you woke me up on my birthday by bouncing on my bed and giving me a picture of a unicorn that you'd drawn. You didn't have any money because you'd gone to the movies twice that month. When I woke up today, my bed was still and silent. Mom and Dad wished me happy birthday at breakfast. They didn't say anything else. Mom made scrambled eggs, which I usually love, but she'd burned them. They gave me a card they'd signed their names to. No personal message, no little doodle, not even a heart. And some book with writing prompts. Religious writing prompts. If you want to write, you can write in here, Mom said.
It'll help you understand our faith's teachings better, Dad said.
I shoved it in my desk drawer and went to school. Maggie, Katie, and June had decorated my locker with balloons and streamers. Maggie bought me a book. It had two kids carrying a red canoe on the cover. I've never been canoeing before, but the book looked good. Katie got me a bracelet with four charms, a heart, a sun, a pencil, and a flower. I can add on to it, too. There's a website where I can buy new charms. June got me a pair of earrings, little blue stones. I usually don't wear earrings, but she told me these reminded her of me and that they looked like my eyes. This made me blush, so I mumbled thank you and shoved them into my pocket. I apologized later for being rude, but she said it was okay. I put the earrings in then. They do look pretty. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss you. P.P.S. Since we usually plan mine together, I also missed having a party this year. I know I could have planned it on my own, or with Mom and Dad, but it didn't feel the same. Monday, November 12th. Dear Scylla, Mr. Carlin took us to the library during art class today. We're starting a unit on sculpture, so Miss Manfredi, the librarian, pulled all these books for us to look through. Mr. Carlin wanted us to feel the muse and be inspired by the masters. He said it in this booming voice, then pounded on his chest. Katie and I rolled our eyes when he turned away. June did too. Mr. Carlin may be cool, but he's also ridiculous. Maybe he should have been a drama teacher instead. It only took me about 10 minutes to page through the books that were left after the rest of the class descended on the table. I saw stuff by Michelangelo and Raphael. None of the other Ninja Turtles, though. Ha ha. But everything looked like a bunch of clay to me. Mr. Carlin was on the computers across the room, probably checking his email, so I wandered into the stacks. Ian Mahoney and the basketball guys were in the fiction area, so I headed for the nonfiction. I looked through a book called The Life Cycle of the Butterfly before I got up the guts to look for what I really wanted, Teen Pregnancy and You. I was kind of surprised that it was on the shelves, actually. Remember a few years ago when Mrs. Clark from church started a petition for the elementary school to ban that book about gay penguins? And Mom and Dad signed the petition and went to the big town meeting? You were so embarrassed. I didn't know enough to be embarrassed then, but I definitely am now. We don't live in the dark ages. If penguins want to be gay, let them be gay. Whatever. Anyway, I thought that after that, Mrs. Clark went around in the middle of the night burning all the controversial books. But there it was, right next to Teenage Sexuality, Opposing Viewpoints and GLBTQ, the Survival Guide for Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, Transgender, and Questioning Teens. Everything I wanted to know about teen pregnancy. Like I don't know enough already. Working up the nerve to actually take the book off the shelf took a few minutes, maybe more. I kept looking around me and moving up and down the aisle whenever I heard giggling or rustling. Someone was wearing corduroy pants, otherwise known as the loudest pants ever. Swish, swish, swish. Luckily, most people were over by the computers. It took me another 2 minutes to open the book and look over the table of contents. I don't know what I was expecting. Information on why being pregnant might make you sad? A chapter on what to do if your older sister gets pregnant, gets sent away to have the baby, and never comes back? When she says she's going to. The book was about 25 years old, though, and all it had was really technical stuff. Eggs, sperm, ovaries, uterus, labor and delivery, newborn care, daycare. I don't care about all those facts. I care about you. Fact. Mom and Dad said that your labor was fine, and the baby is fine, and everything is fine, blah, blah, blah. Fact. The baby, I still think of her as Anna, is with some family that loves her. Fact. You decided to stay at St. Augustine's instead of coming home. Reality. I don't know why things turned out this way. I know you wanted to come home. I just know it. Stupid books. Stupid libraries. Stupid you. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss you. And I hate you. And I love you. Tuesday, November 20th. Dear Scylla, I have to tell you something. I don't know if I should, but it's been living inside me all week. It feels like a huge rock inside my stomach. A huge rock that keeps growing. Last week we went out to dinner for my birthday. We went to Bianchi's, your favorite. When we got there, the host, that old guy who's worked there for about a billion years, asked if we needed a table for four. He pulled out four menus as he was asking the question, too, like he was expecting you to burst in the door any minute. That's how much you're part of this family. The bald guy with the nose hair knows you should be here. I guess Mom and Dad didn't get that memo because Dad shook his head and said we'd need a table for three. The host didn't ask any questions, which I was kind of bummed about. I wanted him to ask why you were gone. I wanted him to mention you, even if he doesn't know your name. If you weren't here, I at least wanted your name to be. But nope. He just gave us our menus and sat us at our regular table. He took away a chair, too. Your chair. Brought it to a table across the restaurant for the short guy with a foot-long beard. He caught me looking at him once and gave me a mean look, so I stopped. Bianchi's still has the lasagna that's almost as big as my head. I didn't order it, though, because I knew I couldn't eat it without you to share it with, and I definitely didn't need to bring home leftovers, since Mom's still cooking like a madwoman. I mean, she used to cook dinner and make those in-a-pinch meals for people at church, but she's turned into some supercharged chef version of the Energizer Bunny. She won't stop. Our freezer is full of frozen lasagnas, enchiladas, and soup. Cookies, too. I didn't even know you could freeze cookies. But what I ordered for dinner isn't the point of this letter. I got the ravioli, by the way. So good. It's who we saw at the restaurant. After we gave the waiter, the one with black hair who you always said was so cute, our drink order, a guy came up to our table. He was tall and skinny and looked like a giant string bean. He wore a thin, green beanish tie, too. He had a big pimple on his chin and a thin black mustache that looked like a hairy black caterpillar. Do you like my description of him? Mr. Barrett taught us about similes yesterday. Similes compare one thing to another different thing. Similes have to use the words like or as, though. Metaphors don't. You probably know that, but I still mix them up sometimes. The man was named Peter. Dad said they played on the same ultimate frisbee team in college. He didn't look like an athlete, but neither does Dad. Every time he told us stories about his glory days at Amherst, I could never picture it. He said he had long, shaggy blonde hair and practiced barefoot. He said he could throw a frisbee the length of a football field. And from April through September, his sunglasses tan made him look like a raccoon. Now he wears suits to work and helps people file their taxes. I don't get it. Peter seemed to remember the old Dad, though. He clapped Dad on the shoulder, which made Dad wince. Tommy, good to see you. It's been too long. Then Dad got up and they did that weird man hug where they pat each other's backs for a few seconds. How have things been since college? Dad shook his head. I can't believe it's been 20 years. They muttered stuff about how it was impossible that they were so old and wasn't it just yesterday that blah, blah, blah. They talked about weird ultimate terminology like hammers and spirit of the game and flicks. He asked Mom if she was still the best baker in the whole damn country. This made me flick, probably not the flick they were talking about, though, my eyes to Mom and Dad. I've never heard Mom swear, and I've only heard Dad say damn once.
That time I was in the back seat and you'd just gotten your permit. You swerved to avoid a squirrel and almost crashed into the brick wall in front of Tony's Pizza. Once it stopped being scary, the look on Dad's face, both when he realized what had happened and when he realized he'd said a swear, well, what they consider a swear, was the funniest thing I'd ever seen. Mom and Dad didn't react, though. Mom just said that, yeah, she was still baking, and Dad talked about how her lemon crumble was a hit of every post-church reception. I bet you miss Mom's lemon crumble. I bet you miss her blueberry scones, too, and her peanut butter cookies. I bet they don't serve anything like that at St. Augustine's. I bet you get stale crackers for dessert, or communion wafers, which are just as gross. Then Peter asked about me. Is this your only kid? She's a beauty. Mom and Dad exchanged a look. That mind-reading look they do when they need to talk without saying a word. Then Dad said something awful. She's our only daughter. He put his hand on my head and smiled. Mom smiled, too. They were the fakest smiles ever. This is Evelyn Jane. I didn't know what to say, so I didn't say anything. My mouth flapped open like the fish Mom buys at the market for No Meat Fridays. I bet my eyes looked as dead, too. I'm not their only daughter. You might be gone, but you're still part of our family. Even if they're ashamed of what you did, they shouldn't deny you. That should be pretty damn, ha, I can say it too, obvious for people who say their favorite book is the Bible. I stared at Mom and Dad hard, like I had some magic power that would make them correct themselves and take back their words. They didn't, though. Dad's lips were pressed so hard together they started turning white. Mom made this little choked sound like she'd been punched in the stomach. They both stared at the ground. But they didn't say anything. It was like because you had a baby before marriage, you didn't exist anymore. That you were just, poof, gone. Like you'd never been born at all. They talked about weddings and jobs and weather and other boring grown-up stuff after that. Then Peter left. The bell on the door jingled behind him. I feel awful for not standing up for you. I don't want to forget you. I don't want other people to forget you. I want to talk to you, and not just in these letters. Was I wrong to tell you this? Is it going to make you feel worse? I need to tell someone, though. If I write about what happened, then it's proof you're real. It's proof you're still my sister. Please write back with proof that that fourth chair won't stay empty forever. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss you. Monday, December 17th. Dear Scylla, today's December 17th. I looked at one of those baby websites online and there was a due date calculator. You could put in the day you got pregnant and it would figure out when you're going to have the baby. I did it backward and put in your due date. Then I fiddled with it until I got the date I wanted. Today is 1 year since you conceived, since you got pregnant. You've only been gone since June, but a year ago today is when everything changed, even if I didn't know it. A lot of things can change in 1 year. A lot of things can change in 6 months. Like me. Here are the most obvious ways I've changed since you left. 1. I'm taller. Only by an inch, but being 5 feet is way better than being 4'11". I had to get new pants because my socks were showing. All my socks are boring white, too. Nothing like the cool print and stripy ones everyone at school has. 2. I started playing the flute. I'm not very good, and sometimes it sounds like a cat when someone stepped on its tail. But I can play Ba Ba Black Sheep and Twinkle Twinkle, and read music now. Mrs. Harper taught us tricks to remember which letters go with which lines and spaces. F-A-C-E. Like a face. Duh. E-G-B-D-F. Every good boy deserves fudge. The official name for the tricks is a mnemonic device, like how you remember the names of the planets by saying, "My very eager mother just served us nectarines." There are lots of other mnemonic devices, too. Maybe you're learning some at your school. That's cool to think about, like how sometimes people look up at the stars and think that someone far away is staring at the same ones. 3. I think I might be allergic to raspberries. Every time Mom brings her raspberry pie to church reception, the back of my throat starts itching. Not a lot, but enough to make me stick my tongue back there and wiggle it around. Last week I didn't eat the pie and Mom got mad at me. 4. I don't really talk to Mom and Dad anymore. Partially because I don't want to, and partially because they're too distracted to talk to me much lately. I ask them to give me a tissue and pass the remote. I tell Mom I need a ride to the store to get new chapstick. I tell them about my day, but only the stuff that happened in class. I don't tell them anything important. I don't tell them about June or how in art class yesterday she kept flicking paint at my nose. Then I flicked red paint at her nose, so we both looked like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer by the end of class. I don't tell them how much I miss you. I still pray with them, but sometimes I'm not sure if God is hearing what I'm saying. 5. There's one more thing that might be different about me. I can't tell you yet, though. I'm not even sure about it myself. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss you. P.P.S. Mrs. Harper told us that when she was younger and Pluto was still a planet, the mnemonic device they used was, "My very eager mother just served us 9 pizzas. We're having pizza tonight. Mushroom pizza. You hate mushrooms. I think that's why we get them now. I'd rather have you than mushrooms, though." Tuesday, December 18th. Dear Scylla, I still haven't heard back from the headmaster. Or from you. Maybe Dr. Locke isn't checking his email because of winter break. But if St. Augustine's is closed for vacation, where are you? I was going to ask Mom and Dad about your Christmas plans the other night, but when I knocked on their door, I heard Mom crying. When I peeked through the crack, I saw her going through the trunk at the end of their bed, where she stores all our baby stuff. She had tons of your old stuff piled on the bed. A pair of tiny sneakers, your frilly white baptism dress, even a gross chewed-on pacifier. Piles of papers and drawings you made when you were little. I backed out of there before she saw me, but not before I saw her face. It was red and blotchy, like she'd been crying for hours. I don't understand. Why would Mom be crying so much if she was so ashamed of having you around? Maybe she misses you after all. I'm going to let Mom and Dad calm down and then ask them about you. Not about only Christmas, but about whether you can come home for good. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss you. Friday, December 21st. Dear Scylla, I waited a few days to ask Mom and Dad. They were finishing up the rosary before bed, so I ducked back around the corner, but it was too late. Mom put her beads on her Bible, and Dad wrapped his around his fingers. Mom was wearing this awful robe she bought herself last month. It's long and black with pearl buttons on it. She looks like a nun, or a 90-year-old widow. I remember when she used to wear fun clothes, like those bright red leggings she had with the white polka dots on them, or the purple bathing suit Dad said made her look like Marilyn Monroe. Dad laughed when I said I didn't know who Marilyn Monroe was, and told me she was some beautiful movie star from the old days. Then he twirled Mom around, bent her practically upside down, and kissed her. He only stopped when he ran down to the ocean, got a pail of water and dumped it on their heads. Everyone on the beach thought we were the weirdest family ever. I'd rather be weird than this, though. Whatever this is. I'd rather be soaking wet and covered in gritty wet sand and seaweed than living in a land of black robes and pearl buttons and sadness. They looked sad when they finally noticed me. Annoyed, too. I started my speech anyway. I was sure I could convince them it was time for you to come home. And that if you're the one staying away on purpose, then it's their job to bring you home. Nothing came out right, though. When I talked about how you were family, Mom teared up. When I talked about how you've been away long enough, Dad's face turned into a mask of stone. Then I started yelling. About how they're not being fair to you or me, and how they weren't fair to your baby by making you hate it. That you wanted to keep it at first, and that everything is their fault. That's when Dad lost it. I've never heard him yell so loudly. That's when Mom started sobbing. Dad teared up too, I think. But that may have been from all the screaming. I had no idea what was going on, so I ran out of the room. I'm crying too. That's why this page is all smudgy. I hope you can still read it okay. I love you. I tried. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss you. P.P.S. I'm not giving up. Monday, December 24th. Dear Scylla, it's Christmas Eve. It's Christmas Eve and you're not here. I wonder if lots of other girls are staying at school with you, or if you're the only one. Maybe lots of students board at St. Augustine's over winter break. Maybe you sing carols and decorate a Christmas tree in the lobby. Maybe you're having a huge feast like they do at Hogwarts at Christmas time. Maybe you're alone in your room. There are too many maybes and only one truth. I don't know what you're doing right now. Nana's special lace tablecloth is on the dining room table, the one you spilled gravy all over when you were my age. The spot is still there in the middle. But Mom didn't put a poinsettia plant over it this year. When I asked her why not, she shrugged and mumbled something I couldn't understand. The Christmas tree is up, but we didn't decorate it. Not 2 weeks before Christmas like we usually do. Not even 1 week before. The branches are draped with colored lights, but the decorations are still in the attic. No paper snowflake that you made in kindergarten with a picture of your gap-toothed smile peeking out from the center. No plastic Elmo. No porcelain rocking horse, the one Mom always put at the tip-top of the tree so no one could break it. We don't even have a real tree. Yeah, you read that right. We didn't go to the tree farm this year. I kept waiting for Dad to drag me out of my bed on some cold, snowy Saturday morning and stick a to-go cup of Dunkin's hot cocoa in my hand, then drag me through a field in search of the perfect tree, where Dad would notice every tree's imperfection.
Too tall. Too few needles. Too many needles. The branch-to-ornament ratio would be insufficient.
Then we'd roll our eyes and Mom would spot the perfect tree and run over and hug it tightly. She turned to Dad with that huge smile of hers, the one I haven't seen since you got pregnant, and he'd agree it was perfect. Maybe we didn't go this year because you weren't here to roll your eyes with me. So we have a plastic tree in our living room. A plastic doesn't smell like anything Christmas tree without a single decoration on it. We have a stained tablecloth that nobody took the time to cover. And we have about 7 million pounds of food, because it looks like Mom made dinner for 300 instead of 3. I hope the food at St. Augustine's is good. Merry Christmas Eve, Scylla. I love you. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss you. Tuesday, December 25th. Dear Scylla, Mom and Dad got me a doll for Christmas. A doll. Like I'm 5 years old instead of 12. Mom said it was a limited edition, special collector's edition doll of Anne of Green Gables, my favorite book. And yeah, it is, and yeah, I love that book, but it's still a doll. Maggie got 5 bottles of nail polish, a dress for her voice recital, a sleeping bag for arts camp this summer, and a new phone from her parents. Katie got shoes, pink leggings, and a new pair of skis. We called each other right away to compare gifts, like we always do. I'm going to see June tomorrow, so I'll find out what she got then. I got a doll. Oh, and 5 Hershey's Kisses in my stocking. The wrappers looked wrinkly, too, like Dad had pulled them out of his pocket at the last minute. Then I got to go to church. I heard words like grace and forgiveness and rebirth and love. I heard Father O'Malley's sermon about how the birth of a baby transformed the world. I kept giving Mom and Dad these super meaningful looks, but they didn't notice at all. Because the only transformation that happened in our house was a bad one. And now the only baby here is a collector's edition one meant for a little kid. I hope you had a better day than I did. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss you. P.P.S. To make the day worse, I caught Mom crying again. I didn't feel bad for her, though. If she's sad that you're not here, she shouldn't have made you feel like you don't belong. Friday, December 28th. Dear Scylla, things June and I have done so far on Christmas break. Watch the first season of Star Trek, The Next Generation, this old science fiction show her mom loves. Then argue about which episode was our favorite. Go to the roller rink the next town over and skate in circles with the elementary school kids. Our excuse was that we were going with June's little cousin Iris, but that was totally a cover story. We wanted to go anyway. It was so much fun, and I only fell once. Play with June's karaoke machine in her bedroom for about 3 days straight. That was her Christmas present. Even though June and her mom don't believe in Jesus, they still celebrate Christmas, which seems kind of weird to me, but I didn't say anything. At least their tree is decorated. Go sledding on the big hill behind the high school. Everyone from school was there because it was the first big snowfall of the year. We took our snow tube and June's toboggan and switched off about 100 times. Then we went back to her house for hot cocoa. Her mom puts in tons of marshmallows and chocolate chip cookies. It was the best vacation ever. Love, Evie.
P.S. Even if it was the best vacation, I still did miss you. Remember last year when you and Alex let me tag along when you guys went to the movies? At the scary part, I threw my popcorn in the air and a bunch of it went down the back of Alex's coat. We laughed so hard the manager threatened to kick us out. P.P.S. I miss things like that most of all. Saturday, December 29th. Dear Scylla, something weird happened yesterday. Something that I was going to mention in my last letter but then chickened out. I kind of want to chicken out again, but I'm going to force myself to write it because I'm confused. Really confused. During one of our sledding runs yesterday, I wiped out, like did a somersault in the air and then face planted into the snow wiped out. It was totally embarrassing. There must have been a bump I didn't see. Either that or the universe hates me. Vivek was right next to me, but he just laughed his high-pitched laugh and started to climb the hill again. He didn't even check to see if I was okay. June coasted down a second later. She didn't hit the invisible bump. But she did run over right away and ask what was wrong, so I showed her my ripped mitten and pointed to my side, which felt like someone hit it with a baseball bat. Then June pointed to my face, which I hadn't noticed was bleeding. But she didn't just point to my face. She touched my face, the scratched-up, bloody bit. It hurt a little bit, but that's not why I flinched. I flinched because June was touching my face. With her fingers. I shivered, too, but that was probably because my hat fell off when I wiped out. June flinched, too, and pulled her hand away. We went up the hill to get a Band-Aid at the Quick Mart next to the high school. I kept sneaking peeks at June, but she didn't say anything else. And once, when I peeked at her, she was peeking at me, too. Love, Evie. P.S. If you were here, I wouldn't miss you, and you could help me figure out what's going on with June. She was almost acting like... Sunday, December 30th. Dear Scylla, Mom finally met June this morning. It didn't go so well. I'd been so excited, too. It was June's first time at our house, and I really wanted her to like it here. It wasn't awful, but it was awkward. Totally awkward. Mom came out of her room. There was a House Hunters marathon on, and she'd been holed up in there all day, when we were eating a snack at the kitchen table. Mom looked kind of dazed, so I introduced her to June. Mom said how nice it was to meet her, that she'd heard so much about her, all that polite stuff she says to everyone at church. She didn't look June in the eyes, though, which I thought was totally rude. That wasn't the rudest thing Mom did, because then she asked June the question. You know, the question about what's obviously the most important thing in the world. Mom. So, June, I didn't see you at church this morning. Do you go to St. Patrick's? Me. Internal screaming and pulling out my hair. June. No, ma'am. My family doesn't go to church. Mom looked surprised. Not mad, really, but disbelieving. Like June had told her she didn't like chocolate or something. Obviously, Mom has met non-Catholic people before, but I don't think she expected me to hang out with someone who didn't go to church. I mumbled something about having stuff to do and pulled June into the living room. I'm not ashamed of June, but I didn't want Mom to find out she was an atheist. They'd think she was the spawn of the devil or something. They'd run her out of town with pitchforks. At least Mom let us leave without dumping a vat of holy water on June. When June and I went into the living room, she was so surprised that she stopped walking. I almost bumped into her. I'm so used to our house that I forget it probably looks weird to other people, especially when it's their first time here. The nativity set isn't that weird, especially since June doesn't know we keep it up all year long. But the crucifix over the mantle and the bloody picture of Jesus on the cross are definitely creepy. I forget about them sometimes, since they've always been there, since church is such a big part of my life, since basically our entire town is Catholic. But everyone isn't Catholic. Not everyone believes in God. I guess June doesn't care that we do, though, because after she blinked a few times at our Jesus decorations, she kept walking toward the TV like everything was normal. She's nice like that. Having June here made me look at things differently, though. Why do we have a bleeding man on our wall? Mom makes such a big deal about how I'm not allowed to watch horror movies because they're inappropriate, but we talk about a dying 33-year-old man all the time. Mom doesn't let me read about zombies, but I hear the resurrection story every single year. It doesn't make sense. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss you. Tuesday, January 1st. Dear Scylla, it's the first day of the new year. Last night I went to a party at Katie's house. Mom and Dad let me go, even though there was a special New Year's Mass this morning. They just made me promise that Katie's parents would drop me off at church at 9 o'clock. Mrs. Foley wasn't a big fan of that idea, so Mom agreed to pick me up. I bet Mrs. Foley wanted to sleep in. So did I. I wish I was an adult and could skip church whenever I wanted to. Maggie slept over, too. June would have, but she was sick. Maggie brought the brand new sleeping bag she'd gotten for Christmas. It's shiny and maroon with silver zippers. I still have my ripped Cinderella one from when I was a kid. I almost don't fit in it anymore. But I felt weird bringing yours, like it needed to be at home in case you came back. Not that you'll come home and need a sleeping bag. I feel like that about all your stuff, though. I haven't touched the snowflake necklace I used to borrow all the time. Katie's younger brother Ben hung around us all night, but he wasn't even that annoying. He kicked our butts at board games. We played Blockus and Settlers of Catan and Twister, then ordered Chinese food. The Foleys poured glasses of sparkling apple cider into fancy wine glasses and handed them out on little trays. They had a make-your-own ice cream sundae bar, too, with three different flavors of ice cream, vanilla, strawberry, and mint chip, crushed Oreos, mini M&Ms, sprinkles, whipped cream, and cherries. Ben is allergic to nuts, so they skipped those. Ben went to bed at 10. He fell asleep on the couch and Mr. Foley carried him upstairs, and the rest of us watched the ball drop in Times Square. We blew noisemakers and wore party hats and threw confetti. The Foleys love New Year's. We used to, too. Remember when I was 7 and you were 11 and Mom and Dad rented out the sports center across town? They invited all their friends from college and church and convinced the management to crank the heat up to 80 degrees. I wore my favorite purple striped shorts. I was so sad when I grew out of those. And a tank top. And you wore that yellow and white sundress that ripped before you got a chance to hand it down to me. We played soccer and kickball and basketball all night long and went home with turf stains all over our knees. That was awesome. The next year was awesome, too, when Mom and Dad decided that 1 year of summer New Year's wasn't enough. Everyone in my class thought I was the coolest for inviting them to a bathing suit and ice cream sundae party. Not so awesome. When you ate 3 huge sundaes in a row and barfed all over the living room couch, I couldn't look at ice cream for the next month. Ew. Dad was wearing a winter coat when he dropped me off at Katie's, though. No cheesy Hawaiian shirt and no sunglasses. The heat at home was set to a normal 67 degrees, and there were no inflatable flamingos on the porch. No one was feeling very sunny this year, especially me, even though Katie and Maggie wouldn't stop trying to get me to blow those annoying noisemakers. I pretended to have fun and cheered when the ball dropped, but I was secretly glad to go to sleep, even in my old sleeping bag on Katie's hard floor. I'm glad to say goodbye to this last year, but I don't want to say hello to the new one. This is my first new year without you at home. There's nothing about that I want to welcome. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss you. Thursday, January 3rd. Dear Scylla, Katie and Maggie want me and June to try out for the school musical with them. Mrs. Harper told us about the show today during music class, and they're so excited. Auditions are at the end of the month, and we're doing Beauty and the Beast. I've seen the animated Disney movie about a million times, but never the musical. I bet they're pretty similar, though. I'm nervous, but I think I want to do it. Here's the problem. We need a parent's permission, and I'm afraid to ask Mom and Dad. You met Alex while you were doing the high school musical. What if talking about Beauty and the Beast makes them remember what happened and they get all mad again? June came over after school again yesterday, and we made oatmeal raisin cookies together. We used Mom's recipe, but Mom didn't help us. She did sit in the kitchen the whole time, though, reading a book. Well, kind of reading a book. She kept staring at us. It was super weird. I'm not used to Mom being home so much. I'm used to her shuttling you all over town, but now you're gone, and Mom is here. A lot. Having a parent around when you're hanging out with a new friend is totally awkward. Not that June is a new friend anymore. We've known each other for 4 months now. More if you count the times we saw each other over the summer. I talk to her more than Katie and Maggie lately, especially after all that time hanging out over winter break. The cookies turned out awesome. I wish I could send one with this letter, but the envelope isn't big enough. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss you. P.P.S. Things are back to normal after all that weirdness on the sledding hill, which is good, definitely good. P.P.P.S. June told me that the next time I go over to her house, she'll show me a horror movie. A really gross one with a monster and a chainsaw. It sounds scary, but also awesome. And Mom and Dad will never know. Wednesday, January 16th. Dear Scylla, your baby is 4 months old now. I read an article about what babies do at 4 months. Here are some of the main things. 1. They smile and gurgle all the time. 2. They start to shake rattles and grab at stuff. They grab tiny things, too, and try to put them in their mouths, so you have to be careful to pick up after yourself. 3. Their vision gets better. They used to see blurs and blobs, and now they see colors. 4. Their eyes follow you around the room. 5. They start to make sounds, sounds like mama and dada. I keep thinking about what it'd be like if you hadn't gone away. If you hadn't gone away and you decided to keep the baby, you'd be living in the bedroom next to me. There'd be a bassinet next to your bed. Or a crib across the room with a pink and green mobile. I bet you'd have taken down all your Broadway posters and put up a bunch of farm animal posters instead. Alex might be sleeping in there too, which is strange to think about. I bet I get used to it though. There'd be a stroller in the garage. I'd take the baby out for walks while you napped, since you would have been up all night feeding her. You'd make me change diapers all the time, and I'd complain, but secretly I wouldn't mind, because I'd know you were busy with school and homework and rehearsals and your daughter. Your daughter. That still sounds so weird. But she isn't your daughter anymore. She's someone else's. Is it sad to think that she's saying mama to someone else? That the colors she's starting to see are on someone else's shirt? That her eyes are following someone else around the room? That she's smiling at another mom? It's weird to me, and she wasn't even inside me for 9 months. But she was still part of me. I thought about the life she was going to have. I thought about it a lot. Then it was ripped away. I don't get why you changed your mind. I thought you wanted to keep the baby. I thought you wanted to marry Alex. What made you change your mind? I asked Dad about the baby once, where she was, who her parents were now. He didn't have much to say.
We went through an agency, he said.
When I asked him which agency and how they worked, he said it didn't matter, because the baby had another family now that wasn't us. Then he shut himself in his office for the rest of the night. I don't understand why he wouldn't even tell me the agency's name. Maybe he didn't care. Maybe you don't care either. Because all I hear from anyone anymore is silence. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss you. Friday, January 18th. Dear Scylla, Mom and Dad said yes to the musical. Now that I know I'm really trying out, I'm super nervous. I'm not a very good singer, not like you. I sound like a strangled bird when I open my mouth. Maybe I can lip sync during the chorus numbers. I bet Maggie will get the lead. She's the only one in our grade who takes professional singing lessons. She wants to sing some opera song from her last recital for her audition piece. I wish I could just do Happy Birthday. I wonder if that's allowed. This is the first time the district is doing a middle school musical. Maggie said it's because the high school one is always so awesome. They want a feeder program, so that by the time we get to high school, we'll already be awesome. Maggie knows all about what's going to happen. Her older sister was in West Side Story, last year's high school musical. You know Hannah, though. You were still here then. You were supposed to be Maria before you dropped out of the show. You need to pick a monologue that shows off your sense of humor. That's what Maggie said at lunch yesterday. I was picking at my tuna fish sandwich, trying to ignore the smell while everyone else ate their non-stinky lunches. Do you have to eat fish on Fridays at your new school? Does the entire cafeteria smell like the ocean? Maggie turned to Katie next. And you should find something dramatic to show how you can cry on cue. Katie looked at me, She had tears in her eyes. It was pretty cool, but definitely not something I